Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast is with you once again. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the show, and I am joined by the one and only Matt Velasquez. He is here after watching the Bucks take a tough overtime loss out at Madison Square Garden in New York. Matt, I heard a rumor that if I'm playing pickup with you, I do not want to step over you. I do not want to find out what you're going to do to me. I'm concerned.
No, that would be the smart move to just go around. If I happen to be on the ground, maybe help me up. That'd be great. especially if you're on my team, you can pull Tony Snell and just run from anywhere on the court directly to where I am. That'd be good. But stepping over me, I think that my response to that would probably be similar to Giannis Antetokounmpo's response for what will happen next time. Because that's just generally disrespectful.
We're going to talk a little bit about our friend Mario Hezonja and the New York Knicks in that game. A couple other topics to touch on. Also, before this podcast is over, we're going to run my interview with Brook Lopez. Talked to him last week before the Bucks played the Bulls, and his brother Robin, who kind of became a star of that show for his body language, trying to play defense against Giannis. But really cool chat. It was short. I asked very many important questions about things like his cat, Star Wars, his hair, some TV. It was a really in-depth interview. I mean, let's be honest, Matt. I'm not going to ask questions about the pick and roll. I'm just not that smart about basketball. So this is where we headed. How would you rank him out of five Velasquezes? Is he the coolest guy on this Bucks team? How many Velasquezes would you give him on the cool scale?
No, he's pretty high up there. I mean, I really want to hear about his cat. I didn't even know he had a cat, yes. And now you're talking about his cat. And I'm interested. Also, he got a haircut, so I feel like talking about hair is very relevant to what's going on in his life right now. You know, I just booked some of the travel for later in the season, and you know the Bucks are they have a home game against the Heat in January, then a back to back in Memphis, and the day after that they'll be in Orlando. And I was like, oh well, you know they'll be in Orlando for a couple days. That day they'll definitely be off after a back to back. Is there a Splash Mountain at Splash Mountain possibility? Because that could be crazy. Just a lot of really important things. And I'm looking forward to, I still haven't even heard the interview you did with Brook Lopez. So I'm looking forward to listening to this podcast after it comes out so I can hear that stuff. So I'm excited for our listeners.
It's pretty short. Brook's cat's name is Poupo. It looks like Poupin if we're talking French. P-O-U-P-I-N. And apparently it does not get along with Robin's cat, whose name is Prince Edward Zephyr. There's just this amazing New York Post article with the headline, NBA twins can't live together because their cats hate each other. With a picture of the two of them on the court. Robin, who of course has the crazy hair, and then Brooke with the shorter look. But the two cats, oh my gosh, the one of them, Poupo, wearing a beret, full French. It's ridiculous. They're crazy dudes. They're very fun, the Lopez twins. So I'm glad that they have a pretty good sense of humor about this whole thing.
This is the content our listeners crave, I'm sure.
It sure is. We could talk a little about the Milwaukee Bucks, I guess. We might as well. The Bucks have split the last two games since we chatted. That Bulls game with Robin, the Bucks struggled. I mean, I don't know if they really struggled, but winning by 2 points against that Bulls team is not going to be seen as exactly a triumph, but they did win the game. They did pull away for a victory. Chris Middleton hits a big shot late in that game in the final seconds to lift the Bucks to victory. But then they go to Madison Square Garden in another close game. They have a late lead again. We've seen this before, although the Knicks shot the lights out. So I don't know how badly Bucks fans can really feel about that one. They lost in overtime. Frustrating because they had a late lead once again. We've seen that. That's been a trend in their losses this season. Again, they've only been blown out once. And I don't even know if you could call it a blowout in Portland. They've only really been beaten once this year soundly. But the one big note from that game was Chris Middleton not playing in the fourth quarter, benched by Mike Budenholzer for a defensive moment. I actually haven't even seen this moment from when earlier in the game where he supposedly was lax on defense. Give me your whole take on that whole thing, because the stunning thing isn't that a player got benched for poor defense. It's that it's Chris Middleton, who is, you know, kind of one of the stand-up guys, kind of one of the leaders of this team. And then they needed a big shot late, and he wasn't on the floor. So what do you make of that whole situation? Did it surprise you afterward when you found out that it was just a straight-up benching, that he wasn't injured or anything like that?
No, it didn't really surprise me because you just look at the way he'd been playing. I mean, his offense had been kind of eh. Like, I think he was like 3-for-11, you know, but that really wasn't the issue. It was just the overall energy about him wasn't that great. Defensively, there were just plays where, you know, he just didn't seem connected to what was going on. And at the end of the third quarter, there was a really bad sequence where he had a rebound. I, by every stretch of the imagination, should have come down with a rebound and kind of just lazily went after it. And so instead, the Knicks get it, and that, you know, leads to a swing and a wide open three, and that's a guy that he's supposed to be closing out on, and he gives virtually no effort in the jogging over to give a fake contest, and obviously the three goes in, and you know, that's basically the last we see of Chris Middleton. You know, I think as of the start of the fourth quarter, you know, Pat Connaughton was in for him, Sterling Brown played a bunch, and Middleton was just kind of stuck at the end of the bench. He had already, you know, he'd started the third quarter, played for a few minutes, come out, and then come back in late in the third. It seemed like he'd been given his chance to kind of pick things up, and he didn't do that. You know, and I guess you can make the argument like, oh, well, maybe Budenholzer could have brought him in at the start of overtime and said, hey, this is what we need from you. We need you to pick it up. Like, can you do that? Like, go out there. Let's win this game. But I asked Budenholzer on Monday, I said, hey, did you ever think at any point about bringing Middleton back in the fourth quarter overtime? And all he said was, nope. So, jeez. You know, he was pretty clear on that. He did try to explain it as he thought that Pat and especially Sterling Brown had been playing really well. They helped the Bucks get to a double-digit lead with about 6 minutes left. Those guys were doing some good things, and I think the reading between the lines, that means that they were playing defense and they were trying hard. You know, and obviously effort and talent aren't the same thing, but you need your talented guys to give effort, and if they're not, it just sends a bad message to the rest of the team. And I think it made sense. I think that, you know, if you want to make the argument that Budenholzer sacrificed a game to make a point, I think you can defend that if you want to. You can say, hey, well, you know what? Like, having Chris Middleton engaged and playing better on defense. Defensively, he hasn't been great this season. I mean, I know he's known as like a 3-and-D type guy, you know, and being 6'8 and having, you know, some athleticism and ability to be versatile and defend multiple positions. Like, on paper, he's a good defender, but I mean, his defensive box plus minus is like negative 0.1 this year. So obviously, hasn't been a positive for him. In that regard, and you can kind of cherry pick stats like that, but generally, it just from the eye test, his defense hasn't been just as good as you might think it could be on a consistent basis. You know, so getting him energized and locked in on that end could be a net positive for the Bucks in the future and help them win games that maybe they might not down the road. You could also say, hey, you know, you need every win you can get, and sacrificing wins is, you know, short-sighted, and maybe you can get Middleton on board by doing something else. But yeah, you know, that's the way Budenholzer decided to go about it. The two guys, Middleton and Budenholzer, they talked for what supposedly was a long time in the theater room at the Bucks practice facility on Monday before practice. Went over some film, cleared the air, got on the same page, and are ready to kind of move on and get back to you know, how things should be and get back to winning.
To his credit, he did the stand-up thing after the game and spoke to reporters and was pretty candid and honest about it and suggested that he kind of deserved it. And then, of course, like you just said, he's met with Budenholzer, and presumably we'll see him in tip-top shape going forward. You know, he's an interesting guy to follow because you don't really know what his future is beyond this season with the Bucks. I mean, at some point they're going to have to discuss how much it is worth it to them for them to keep him, you know? So I find that interesting, especially in this era of Bucks basketball where defense has been re-emphasized, and you'd like to think that Middleton is still going to be a part of this team beyond this season, but I don't know. I mean, I know we're putting the cart before the horse, but what is sort of your sense there? I mean, do you think we're headed toward a situation where this is kind of going to be his last year in Milwaukee, or do you think that we just don't have enough data to even have be able to approach that question yet?
Yeah, I don't think we know yet. I think it's going to be a really tough decision. Throughout the past year, maybe year plus, the Bucks have been very intentional at having, you know, Milton at big events and saying he's one of their stars. You know, that Giannis is obviously the star.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But Middleton has been right along there, and they like, you know, they boost him up. Obviously, in the playoffs, he had a great series against the Celtics, and he did a lot of the talking at the podium after the games. I know Giannis doesn't always like to talk at the podium, So Chris was always up there, you know, win or loss, you know, he was up there, you know, and especially losses, he was up there, and sometimes Giannis wasn't. And so he, you know, they know his value and they know what he brings to the team. But it really all comes down to, you know, how much they want to pay him and also what he wants, you know, because if he wants a max contract, which, you know, it's totally reasonable to think that a team would be willing to give him that on the open market, you know, then the Bucks have to decide, do they want to give him that max deal, which they can give him a better max deal than anybody else, because of the way that the NBA CBA works. But that would include, you know, escalating raises every year. And then you might get stuck in like a Blake Griffin or John Wall type situation where you have a guy who's making just like insane amounts of money and it's growing and growing each year. And then you're stuck with that contract, you know, if you're good or not. And so the Bucks have to decide what his value is and what, you know, and what his worth is. And he has to decide what he wants. Does he want to take a max contract from a team where he might be the number one star, but they might not win a lot? Or does he want to take a max contract or slightly less than max to join up with some other team, some other superstar, and, you know, and create something there? Does he want to take maybe less money, or not the max, but close to the max, and stay with the Bucks on like a $30 million contract or something like that? I mean, all those things we've yet to figure out. I think part of it depends on how far the Bucks go in the playoffs and how everything shakes out. I mean, there's just so many moving parts. There's also Eric Bledsoe and Malcolm Brogdon, who are due for free agency this summer. I mean, the Bucks have a bajillion different ways they can go with not just those three guys, but with Brook Lopez, who will be a free agent. You know, they have to figure out what they want the roster to look like in the future, how they're going to fit it all under the luxury tax line, or if they're going to go over the luxury tax line and pay that extra money to, you know, to ensure they have the best team possible. You know, I think part of that will come down to if they make it to the Eastern Conference Finals or the finals, you know, like if they get that far and they think this team as currently composed can be a title contender, does that change how much money they're willing to spend on the guys that they have? Does it change who they would be interested in targeting in free agency? Does that change the players that are currently on the team, how much they want to stay, and if they'd be willing to, you know, leave some money on the table to stay because they know that they can reach that high of a level and possibly compete or win a championship? So there's just so many moving parts. Everyone is still kind of figuring things out, and staying focused on the regular season. You know, we'll get to all those questions in the springtime, but for now, like I said, I just don't think we have enough information.
Speaking of that regular season, it's been a while now where the Bucks have basically played 500 basketball, and that's misleading because all their losses are close. And you mentioned some of the stats that show where they rank in offensive and defensive efficiency. I mean, they are still one of the best teams in the league, but they are second in the East standings by three games behind the Raptors, and they're barely ahead of the 76ers at this point. I don't know if you want to call it the fair weather fan in me is looking at this and thinking, did they just get off to a hot start and are actually sort of just a slightly above average team? Or am I, you know, what would that viewpoint be missing? Because I know that this is still a really good team, but at some point you see sort of the win-loss back and forth. It starts to get a little concerning, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, the back and forth wins and losses, like that does get concerning, but they still have, you know, they're still rated incredibly high in terms of a lot of different things. Net rating, they're still way up there. Like Basketball Reference's simple rating system that ties in like margin of victory and strength of schedule, they're still the best in the NBA. I think, you know, you mentioned close games and how they've lost a lot of close games. I think they're 6-6 in games that have included clutch minutes, according to NBA.com's tracking of that. That means any game that is within 5 points at any point in the last 5 minutes. So they've played 12 of those games. They've gone 6-6. You know, some of them they've, you know, because I know people like to point to, oh, like they have a poor record in games that are decided by 3 points or less. But some of those games were within like one possession in the last minute or two, and then they won by six. Like they beat Denver by six, and they beat San Antonio by six. And so those don't count as like one possession games because they took firm control. And I was just looking yesterday on Monday at the clutch time stats for some other teams, and most teams are like, you know, they're they're up and down. I mean, the Bucks being 6-6 was about league average for what's going to happen in that time. I think the Warriors were like 5-6 or 6-6, and the Rockets were like 5-5. And the crazy thing to me was that the 76ers were like 13-2 or like 12-3 or something like that. They had an absurd number of close games, which by nature you would expect that a close game between two NBA teams might be a coin flip, right? If you're within one possession, you know, in the final couple minutes, it just comes down to one team makes a shot, one team doesn't, one team gets a stop, you know, one team doesn't. I mean, we've seen it since Jimmy Butler got there. He's made like two game-winning shots, and they weren't necessarily on like the greatest looks of all time, but they went down. And so, you know, you just kind of get that, and you'd expect that over time those numbers would kind of reach some type of equilibrium, like teams that get crushed or are getting crushed on the win-loss record in crunch time games, you'd expect to like have that come back to them a little bit. Like the Charlotte Hornets, for example, they were getting a lot of like publicity for how poorly they had done in close games, and then they beat the Bucks in a game that was close. You know, granted they were up by 25, but then Bucks got it within one, but Charlotte did enough to get that win in Charlotte. You look at the Bucks, like they could have beaten the Suns if Chris Middleton could have gotten his 3-point shot up a little bit quicker, or if they had a little bit more time on the clock, because he was off by maybe like 0.3 seconds in terms of getting that shot off, and it went in. You know, so I think that yes, like they should not be losing games to the Knicks. They shouldn't be losing games to the Suns. They shouldn't be playing that close against the Bulls. Those aren't, you know, great looks for a team that has high aspirations and a high level of talent. But I think that over the course of the season, those types of things happen. I think we discussed this on the last podcast, and that you would expect that over time, those things would kind of, you know, bear out. Right now, they're going through a stage where they had two games out of three where they couldn't finish at crunch time. And, you know, maybe over the course of the season, they can finish more often than they don't. But, you know, I don't think that's a huge issue. I think it'd be more of an issue if they were losing by like double digits to a bunch of those teams. You know what I mean? Like if they were 15-7 and had a bunch of losses that like were bad losses where they just kind of gave up at the end and lost by, you know, a more significant number of points, then you might start to see a few more problems. But they still have the best scoring differential in the league, even as we get further into the season. And they've kind of been up and down for the past couple games. They still maintain that. It's still over 10. That's elite to have a point differential over 10. And as long as they can kind of figure out some of their execution issues at the end of games, I think that over time, I think they might be able to maybe get off that 500 mark in clutch games and start to build up a little bit of some momentum there.
The Bucks will see the Knicks again, of course, in Madison Square Garden on Christmas. That'll be the Bucks' return to the Christmas schedule, which I know people are excited about. That will be an opportunity for Giannis and Mario Hezonja to renew acquaintances. There was this moment in the game where Hezonja threw down a pretty good dunk on Giannis, who's trailing the play a little bit, then stepped over him. Apparently that's disrespectful. I'll be honest, I'm more of a baseball than a basketball guy. A lot of unwritten rules in baseball, and I can't stand any of it. It's just a bunch of like older dudes trying, you know, like applying little kids' logic to stuff like this. So I don't know if this is truly the most disrespectful thing you can do on a basketball court. I don't know. So I'll ask you the question because Giannis afterwards said that that he would do something very untoward if that happened again. I'll ask you the same question I ask my children every time they come to me with some problem. Is this foolishness, Matt Velasquez?
Yes and no. Yes and no. I think that, you know, so I would say that I don't think Hezonja dunked on Giannis. I think that, you know, if you watch the play, like Hezonja's running out in the fast break, he gets around Middleton, he goes for the dunk. Giannis is like sprinting from behind to try and like possibly block him. He's just a tad late, doesn't block him. You know, Hezonja dunks it, and you know, they get a little wrapped up. Giannis is on the floor, kind of lays back before he's about to get up, and Hezonja, you know, looks at him, stares him down, and like purposely steps over him, stepping over his legs instead of going around him, which everyone knows, like the Allen Iverson, Tyronn Lue step over and just kind of how disrespectful that was. And, you know, it's just not a sportsmanlike play or move, if you wanted to call it that. I think it would have been more disrespectful if Hezonja stepped over like Giannis's like torso or face. That would have been, I mean, that probably would have come to blows immediately. Stepping over his legs is bad, but not maybe as bad. But it definitely riled up the crowd at the Garden. I mean, one of the best things is, you know, everybody talks about the Garden and when the fans are locked in and loud and crazy, and that got them crazy, and it was fun, and I enjoyed that. And the funny thing about the situation is, like, I didn't know how to phrase it necessarily on Twitter at the time, but I totally wanted to say something to the effect of, like, Hezonja just stepped over Giannis, and I'm totally here for it. Because, like, people can read that wrong. Like, oh, like, Matt hates Giannis. Like, Matt loves disrespect. Like, no, I just love drama and craziness and nonsense and things that make the Garden go nuts. Like, those things are all things that I enjoy. Like, yes, it is general nonsense, but when that happens, you're like, oh my, what's going to happen next, right? Like, you want to know what Giannis is going to do. And then a couple possessions later, like, he throws out a dunk, like, lets out a primal scream, like, throws a shoulder into Noah Vonleh, like, and, like, the Knicks call timeout. Hezonja's walking to the bench, wants no part of even looking back at Giannis. Like, he's not looking beyond, like, his peripheral vision to see, like, what Giannis is, like, getting all excited about. And Giannis is, like yelling, like, yeah! And there's all this stuff, and it's great. Like, I love the drama, love the passion, the intensity. Like, it was all fun. And so, like, that's kind of what I wanted to, like, let out in that moment. But being limited in characters and also trying to, like, encapsulate what just happened in that moment, I knew people would take it the wrong way. And maybe people take it the wrong way, like, just hearing me talk about it now. But I love that stuff. I love the craziness. I love the drama. I love the pettiness. The NBA is great with that stuff. And now we get to see what happens when Mario Hezonja and Giannis Antetokounmpo, like, meet again on Christmas. Like, whoever thought that'd be a storyline? Whoever thought I would care anything about what Mario Hezonja was doing? He's not playing well basketball-wise. Like, he barely played that night. Like, he was a starter in, like, name only. He played an insignificant number of minutes. Like, didn't really see the court in crunch time. Like, it wasn't, like, that affected the outcome of the game at all. But now we all care about what Mario Hezonja is doing and what Giannis might do. And Christmas is just going to be so fun.
Yeah, it does take some stones for a guy that nobody has heard of. Mario, or I shouldn't say nobody, but certainly he's not a household name, Mario Hezonja, to step over an MVP. And now those stones might be in danger if he's not careful, as Giannis
told us. There you go. Well, and you know, and I asked Giannis about it on Monday. So, hey, you had 2 days to reflect. Do you feel any differently about what you said? And he was like, oh, no, I meant everything I said, but I probably should have phrased it better because I'm a role model for kids, and I don't think it'd be good if kids are coming up to me in the road like, hey, yeah, punch him, you know? It's like, you know, that's not great, but, like, he wasn't backing down. He wasn't, like, retracting his statement. He was like, no, like, that's all still totally very true, and I won't take any of that back, but I should probably watch my words a little bit better next time because I'm a role model for kids. And it's like, okay, like, that's good awareness on his part.
The Bucks play, as you're listening to this on Wednesday, the Bucks play at home against the Detroit Pistons. Then they got a pretty intriguing portion of their schedule. Friday night, it's the Golden State Warriors, the somewhat beleaguered Golden State Warriors, by their standards certainly, heading into Pfizer Forum on Friday night, followed by a big battle Sunday, 5 o'clock local time. The Bucks in Toronto to face the first place team in the Eastern Conference, followed by kind of a tough just back-to-back in that they're traveling home again, the Cavaliers. Cleveland Cavaliers, not as difficult an opponent, but that'll be Monday night. Those will be all the games that go on before our next podcast. Obviously, it's tempting to just talk about the Warriors, but I don't want to talk about that game. Let's talk about the Raptors game. I imagine because Toronto and Milwaukee aren't the, I don't know, trendiest of markets, it's not going to be as big a deal as it probably could be. But what are you looking for out of that game? Because that's an opportunity for the Bucks to play with the team that they might be chasing all year, the best team in the Eastern Conference, the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, no, that's going to be a great game. I'm very excited for it. Just looking ahead to see, you know, what Giannis and the Bucks and Kawhi and the Raptors look like. Because we've already seen these two teams play. They had that battle of undefeated teams at Pfizer Forum back in October, but Giannis was in the concussion protocol. Kawhi was, you know, resting. The Raptors also didn't have OG Anunoby and Fred VanVleet. They didn't have their whole crew together. And the Bucks obviously won that game in Milwaukee. So now taking these two teams who have been the cream of the crop in the East early in the season, and getting them together and seeing, you know, just like what kind of fireworks happen when they actually play. I think it'll be great. I just am intrigued to see Kawhi Leonard in person. I haven't seen him in person in quite a long time. You know, I don't think very many Bucks fans have either, just because of all the craziness last season and in his last year with the Spurs. The Raptors, you know, they're the first team in the league to 20 wins. Granted, they've already played 25 games. The Bucks have only played 22. So, you know, even if the Bucks, you know, won their next three games or caught up in terms of games played, they'd still be two games behind. But I'm just fascinated by, you know, the versatility of the Raptors and guys like, you know, Siakam and Van Vliet and Lowry and Danny Green, obviously, was kind of a quiet, unsung part of that offseason trade, just how they're all going to fit together and just the different matchups that you'll see and just how the Bucks will have to rise to the challenge and play with a really high level of intensity for two games in a row. I mean, you have that Warriors game, and you can't look past the Warriors for the Raptors. Like, you're going to have to be at a really high emotional energy level for Friday night. It's like an 8:30 game on ESPN.
That's late.
And then, so they have that game. Then you travel to Toronto on Saturday. I mean, I have my doubts as to whether or not they'll practice on Saturday, just with the travel day coming off of the late game. Maybe they'll have some type of, you know, shorter team session or individual session when they get to Toronto. But they, you know, you have to be able to go from whatever happens against the Warriors, and you know you're going to get a good shot from the Warriors because they, you know, will very likely have taken umbrage to the way the Bucks ran them off the court at Oracle back in November. You know, and granted, they won't have Draymond Green again, so you'll be getting kind of the same Bucks team versus the same Warriors team that we saw out in Oakland. So you'll have to be up for that game. That you have to be up for the Raptors, and it's just gonna be a fun weekend of basketball for the Bucks. And you know, a minor subplot is Thon Maker always plays well against the Raptors. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. But, you know, for some reason, you get, like, Canada Thon or, like, Raptors Thon, like, whatever it is. So, like, we'll see if Mike Budenholzer taps into that and if it happens again. Because, like I said, it's still a very minor thing. It's not like Thon's going to play big minutes. He usually doesn't. But for whatever reason, he gets up for the Raptors, and that seems fun.
You should read Lori Nichols' profile on Thon Maker at jsonline.com. That should be posting by the time you hear this podcast. Not only that, but everything Matt Velasquez writes shows up there as well. He, of course, is the Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Matt, we're gonna move now to my interview with Brooke Lopez. So I'm gonna say goodbye to you, and we're gonna ask these very important questions of Mr. Lopez, and we will catch you next week. Thanks for joining us, man.
All right, can't wait.
My guest is Brooke Lopez, forward for the Milwaukee Bucks. Brooke, when you, kind of 3 years ago, you started kind of a major shift, sort of, if you look at stat lines, from when you were more of an interior guy exclusively to where you started shooting, you know, 5 to 7 threes a game. What were the conversations like that got that started? What was that, work with a specific coach or a specific change in personnel that kind of put you in that position?
Yeah, when I was in Brooklyn, you know, the team hired Kenny Atkinson, and the way he runs offense, he does do a lot of five out stuff. He coached under Bud in Atlanta, and so you know, he does a lot of similar stuff. So he came to me in the offseason, just told me he wanted me to shoot a lot of threes. He really wanted to space the floor with all five guys out there. And so it was just from there on, just working on threes in practice and shoot around, and then translating them to game situations.
When you were kind of in conversations with the Bucks to come here, I'm imagining then having a little familiarity then with somebody who's worked with Budenholzer helped. Was there any talk about changing or just like continuing what you were doing, even expanding on what you were doing the last couple years?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was definitely a good primer, you know, doing what I did in Brooklyn. And then coming here, you know, I kind of had my feet wet already. And so I knew I was getting into a little bit. It was just kind of, I guess, expanding that even more to just more five out, you know, consistently five out. Yeah. That's, you know, pretty much the base of our whole offense.
What other factors were attractive about Milwaukee? I mean, I don't know what you knew about the city prior to this. If there had any been conversations even that you would be coming here in an off season beforehand, like what was it about this place?
You know, I think the timing's just, you know, great to be a Buck right now. I mean, you look obviously at the new arena, the ownership group, Coach Bud coming in. And obviously, you know, the players, you know, there's such fantastic talent here, you know, with guys like Chris Ledbrog and obviously Giannis. It was a very attractive situation. And then, you know, they're just all such great teammates and great guys to be around both on and off the court.
The Milwaukee fans will know you. I think the first exposure to you is when, if they're Marquette fans, they saw you hit a game-winning shot in the NCAA tournament right. when you were with Stanford. What do you remember about that play? That was heartbreaking for the locals, but that had to be pretty uplifting for you guys.
Yeah, it was great. You know, it was incredible. You know, I remember it pretty well. And I'll be honest, like, I'll get in an Uber or something like that or go out to eat. And the waiter or the guy driving the Uber, it's always someone remembering, hey, you're awesome. The guy that hit that shot 10 years ago against
really?
Marquette in the tournament. I'm like, God dang, I can't escape.
People really
it.
Are still bitter. I didn't
yeah,
know that.
Yeah,
that's
they,
awesome.
They remember. It's incredible.
We're recording this on the night. You'll see your brother, Robin. How often do you keep in touch with him on a regular basis? I imagine you see him a couple times a year, but how often
yeah.
do you talk to him?
Mm-hmm. We talk a lot. We have a group chat between our friends where we pretty much do our talking. It's not really about basketball or anything like that. We talk about so much with everyone else. It's just pretty much all our other interests, you know, comics, Disney, movies, just whatever it is.
Yeah. How come he's going with the fro and you're not? What's the what's
he,
the
he always has.
Yeah?
He just went to the barber, or I went to the barbershop one time in like, God, it must have been in like elementary school, and he didn't. He always hated getting his hair cut. He whined about it and complained about it, cried about it. And so he just didn't go one time, and it's stuck ever since.
Yeah. So it is Oscar season. I know you mentioned you're big into movies and comics. Black Panther might get nominated for Best Picture, hopefully, this year. What is sort of your relationship to that stuff? Obviously, in season, you got a lot going on. Are you still able to kind of keep up on stuff like that?
I definitely try to. I feel I don't get to the movies as much as I should. I try to watch a lot of old stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like with Amazon Prime and Netflix and stuff like that, and try to buff up on my sort of movie history.
Yeah. I read an article about your cat, Poopo. Is that how I'm saying that right? How you had ordered car service for him in late 2017, well, you were in the car to begin with, but to get him out of some danger when there were some fires in California.
Yeah.
What's the update on him? He's still around? Where's he living?
He's great. He's out here in Milwaukee. He's living with me, and he's living the life. He's enjoying it. The long road trips, I think they bother him a little, but he's always excited to see me when I get back and doesn't leave my side. We're inseparable.
Awesome. Yeah, how old is he? He's got to be up there now, right?
Yeah, he's probably 10 or 11.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Cats do live a lot longer than it seems like they would.
He's an indoor cat, too. So
he doesn't have a lot of wear on the tires, I guess.
No.
I know also you're a big Star Wars guy. That franchise is interesting. I feel like it's lost a little momentum with the Solo movie, and then they've kind of scrapped a couple movies. How do you feel? What is the state of the Star Wars? What is your perspective on that, on the franchise? Because it seems like it maybe has lost a little bit of its momentum here.
I mean, I love Star Wars. You know, I always love Star Wars. I love the original classic trilogy. That's like kind of my go-to.
Sure.
And the original extended universe as well. You know, that being said, I got to admit, I'm pretty stoked for the... You know, the Star Wars Galaxy's Edge is their building,
the
lands they're building in Disneyland and Disney World. I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Yeah, and they're talking about making a series out of it and stuff like that. I think, am I mixing stuff up? Jon Favreau, I think, is going to direct
something
like that.
Oh, yeah, The Mandalorian.
Like
yeah,
yes,
The
yes.
Mandalorian for the Disney
streaming
service.
Diego Luna's coming back for that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, they got a lot going on.
I also know that, or at least I believe, that you're a very good swimmer. Do you still get a chance to get in the pool pretty often? Or is that...
I do in the off season.
Yeah.
Not as much in season. Obviously, out here, unfortunately, can't really go outdoor.
No,
swimming,
this is not good swimming weather.
Yeah. My place in Orlando and then back home in California definitely got a pool. And my mom was, you know, Olympic level athlete, swam and did all that stuff. So she passed it down to us as well. You know, my oldest brother is actually the best swimmer of us.
Yeah. All right. So last question. You've been a Buck now for a while. What early part of the season, quarter of the season? What's the memory that sticks out? What's the moment that resonates so far?
And there's been so many of them. You know, we've had a lot of quality wins. But, you know, it's got to be just hanging out with the guys, you know. And honestly, when we come to practice, it's been such a pleasure, which is such a surprise. You know, we're coming in and I guess it shouldn't be a surprise considering the guys. But, you know, coming into work, we're just having fun out there.
Yeah.
We're having a great time, you know, regardless of what we're doing. We're coming in, working hard, focusing, but also having a lot of fun as well.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Cool. Thanks to Brooke Lopez. Thanks to Matt Velasquez. Again, you can find the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you think. You can also give me, J.R. Radcliffe, some feedback on Twitter. I am at J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. Matt Velasquez is at Matt_Velasquez. That's VelazQuez. Also find us on Spotify, Stitcher. Let us know what you think. Every podcast is posted at jsonline.com. We've we've got all kinds of stuff on the Milwaukee Bucks up there now, including the aforementioned story about sort of Mike Budenholzer and Chris Middleton clearing the air after Middleton was benched for that fourth quarter in Madison Square Garden. You'll want to check that out. And thanks for listening to this edition of the Bucks Podcast. We'll be back at you again next week. Enjoy that game, especially that Friday game, the Warriors in town. That is going to be a fun one. 8:30 start time, a late game, lots of fun. And then the Bucks, of course, off to Toronto for another big battle 2 days later. So this is a big week for the Milwaukee Bucks franchise. We'll talk about it next week. Thanks for listening.